This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Chris Eliopoulos and Mike Scopa.
Welcome back, Milers. I'm your host, Chris Eliopoulos, and with me, as always, is the Dean of Disney, Mike Scopa. Welcome back, Mike.
Thank you, Chris, and I think that November is now behind us, and now it's crazy Christmas season.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it. It's already started. Everything by me is freezing cold, so I'm waiting for the snow.
Yeah. By the way, are you running in this cold? What are you running in these days?
I run naked as always.
Oh, okay. Just like the rest of us, yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's even this morning, I was going to get up and run, and it was like 28 degrees this morning, and I just said, you know what? I'm not doing it today. So I chickened out, but I usually run. I've got my thermal, you know, like undershirt and, you know, long pants and stuff like that. But, you know, once you get going, you start sweating, it doesn't really matter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not wearing shorts or anything, but I'm definitely, you know, but I'm, you know, like it's not been so bad. Like this weekend is supposed to be 45 to 50 or something like that by me. So
that's good.
My long run will be on Sunday, so I'll keep that going. So we're getting there. I'm close. Last weekend I hit 19 miles, so I'm close. I'm getting.
Yep, you're pretty much ready. Pretty much ready.
So
you know,
very good. Very good.
So okay,
all right. Let's get some news going.
Okay, interesting stuff. I have about five or six pieces of information that I think would be interesting. So I believe this week the Hatbox Ghost has made his appearance at the Haunted Mansion in Walt Disney World. And for those who are going over the next couple of weeks, month, whatever, you're going to be seeing him as you get into your dune buggies and you go down that crazy hallway. You get to the place where there's that endless, what they call it, the endless hallway, where you see the candles, you know, floating at the back. He's to the left of that. And he has a window. It looks like a window over his right shoulder. And next to him is a, looks like some kind of a carrier thing with the boxes or whatever. And there's a lantern. And he's sort of in a blue light. And he moves back and forth. And every couple of seconds, his head goes from on top of his shoulders to the hat box. So that's now. And he sways. His whole body sways. He looks kind of interesting. What one of the interesting things I found out is that there are complaints about the
Hatbox. There's always complaints. Come on.
Purists. Okay. So number one complaint is that now there are 1,000 ghosts in the Haunted Mansion. No more can they say 999. You know, maybe he was around and he's now showing up. Maybe he's been one of those 999.
Another one drifted off into the next. You know, whatever. Get over yourselves.
Yeah.
You know,
Lord. And there's another one that kind of, I guess you can make an argument two or four. If you go through the Haunted Mansion and you know the story and you're going through the hallway and everything, you then come to Madame Leota and the seance room.
Yep.
And that's when she calls the ghost to appear. So there are people who are saying, well, wait a minute, why is he appearing before the seance, you know? And I'm thinking, well, we hear ghosts before the seance room. We see, you know, people trying to get out of coffins or whatever. So people just being people saying, you know, he should have appeared maybe at the before you hit the graveyard or whatever.
Yeah, this reminds me of the comics. So many people, as they get older and they're still into comics, we have an older crowd into comics, they always ask questions now. How does Superman keep his cape under his shorts or his pants when he's wearing his Clark Kent? What happens if Batman's wheel, you know, pops or something? Who changes the attire? And it's like, okay, now you've gone too far. And I think it's the same thing with this. You have to go in and just enjoy and get caught up in it, you know, go into the disbelief of this. Just go with it. Stop trying to like explain everything away. Have fun. Be a child again.
I do know how Superman does that. He has a little area in his cape where he puts his Clark Kent stuff.
Right. Well, the other way around, when he's wearing Clark outfit, where does he put his cape? You know, is it tucked down his pants? But that's going to be awkward. But that, again, see, we're getting into things that, like,
yeah,
just go with it and have fun with it. That's the idea behind this. So, all right, that's my rant for the day.
Okay, that's good. There's probably more coming, maybe. Earlier this week, or more recently, there was a conference. The New York Times held its Dale Book conference, and Andrew Sorkin interviewed Bob Iger. And Bob Iger announced that he will be leaving the Disney company in 2006.
Sure.
He also said there's no substance to the rumor about they want to sell ABC.
Right.
As far as I know, that's not going to happen. But Sorkin is an interesting guy because he was asking pointed questions, and he, you know, asked Iger about coming back and everything. And apparently, you know, he did not plan to come back. The phone rang, and they said, you know, we would like you to consider coming back. And he talked it over with his wife, and the decision was made for him to come back. And he said one of the reasons was that he was disappointed in what he was seeing. When Sorkin kind of pressed him about Chapek, and if that was a mistake, Iger was very careful. He said, well, if you want to call it a mistake, then you'd have to include the board of directors as part of that group that made a mistake or whatever. Right. He's going to be around 2006 and see what happens. Okay. He also said he reached out to Governor DeSantis.
Mm-hmm.
Governor DeSantis of Florida, who, and he wanted to have a conversation with him, and DeSantis said, no, don't want to talk. So
yeah, he wants it all to go away now. Now he's running for president. He's getting burdened by this.
But you think about it, Chris. I mean, this is getting off the track a little bit, but if I were in DeSantis's shoes, maybe I would welcome that, and maybe something good would come out of it and it would help him. I don't know. I just think it was a mistake to say, no, I don't want to talk about it, you know?
Well, I think the whole thing was a mistake, but that's, you know, I think maybe he's starting to realize he didn't get the accolades that he thought he was going to get for doing this. So, you know, he's out of the loop. But so did Iger like tell his advertisers like to F off or whatever? Oh, wait, wrong person. Sorry. That was Musk, wasn't it?
It was Elon Musk. Well, actually, Disney is back on X. They did go back.
Did they?
But I think they were the first company to go back after they had said they would pause all activity, but they're back. I believe they posted within the last day or so back on X. As of this morning, only the night of December 16th and the night of December 20th are available for Disney's Hollywood Studios Jollywood Nights. All the other nights are sold out. So if you have an extra $169 in your pocket, go to Jollywood Nights.
Burning a hole in your pocket?
Yeah, it's burning a hole in your pocket. Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party has completely sold out. And when I saw that, I thought, gee, what kind of revenue that brings in. And I have I did some math, and I think it's low because years ago, a colleague of mine who used to work with me at Mouse Planet, we used to do whatever we could to find out all this information. We found out that when they had the Very Merry Christmas parties, when they had the not-so-scary parties in the Magic Kingdom back in the 90s, they capped the attendance at 25,000 people because they wanted it to be enjoyable. I don't know if that's the same case, because since then, obviously, the Magic Kingdom has expanded probably up to 30,000 maybe.
Right.
But let's stay at 25,000. And with the tickets costing about $169 a piece, I did the math, and that comes out to a gross amount of $4.23 million for every party. So for every party night, they make an extra $4 million plus. So
I wonder what the operating costs are for those hours.
Well, You're probably paying cast members what normally would be paid. I think that if you have extra fireworks, possibly you have the extra parade, you may have a few extra cast members going through the parade and stuff. So, you know, it's probably a little bit more than it would be, but I'm sure that they're.
Well, I mean, plus it has to be, you know, even just like the building of whatever, like the parade stuff or whatever else you want to do. It's ameliorated across the whole month, you know?
Right. But on a nightly basis, it's probably a certain amount. It's going to cost us X amount of dollars to run this party for 4 hours.
Right.
So anyways, I believe that's all I have for the news right now.
Wow. Light week for the news.
Light week for the news. That's for sure.
Very good.
So I was thinking about what we could talk about today, and I thought about all the podcast shows you and I have been involved with, and I try to be original, and I also try to think of something that you would really like.
Okay.
And get interested in and jump right in and be able to talk about stuff. And I came up with the title of Nobody's Perfect. Nobody's Prefect. And that is going to be the title of this segment. Okay. And basically what I want to talk about, or what you and I would consider, and this is good because it'll be right off the top of your head.
Mm-hmm.
Mistakes that were made in Walt Disney World by those who developed Walt Disney World. And maybe perhaps mistakes that would not have been made had Walt been alive when the designs were being considered.
Interesting.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's one. That one's hard. I always think it's hard to predict what Disney would.
Yeah,
have
I
done.
Mean,
I think it's hard for them as well.
Yeah, in general, I think we could come up with something. I mean, to me, and just to start us off, I think that to me, the most recently opened attraction that I think he would love, and it's pure Walt Disney, is Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. I think that would be right at the top of his list that he would like.
Right.
That's me. All right. So let's start off with the Magic Kingdom.
Okay.
In general, I think that the Magic Kingdom park is too small. I think that they should have designed it and a lot much larger scale because of certain things that I've noticed. Like, I think Main Street USA should be a little bit wider and a little bit longer. I think that they kind of blew it. When you go into Adventureland, I think that the Pirates of the Caribbean attraction, it just does not seem to be as grand scale as it is in Disneyland. And if you've ridden both attractions, and I know you have, Chris, you may see what I mean. Like New Orleans Square is really, really done well, but there's just not enough room for pirates here. So
yeah,
that's one.
Well, I would think they were just basically copying what they had in Disneyland at the time, and no one predicted that the sales numbers and the guests would grow as much as it did. But you have to say, though, they bought the property a lot. Like, they bought a lot because they knew they were going to expand. Why wouldn't you just scale it up a bit and sort of just enlarge the whole park? Like, make it, like, 1.5 times the size of Disneyland. It just seems, like it was a not forward-thinking procedure.
There were no plans to put Pirates of the Caribbean in Walt Disney World. That was supposed to be some kind of a Western themed attraction. And there were clamorings for Pirates of the Caribbean. So they said, okay, we'll move to Pirates of the Caribbean. Had they originally planned to put pirates in that space, maybe it would have been different. But I really think that they probably would have liked, if they could go back in time, they would have allocated more space for the pirates. And another attraction would be the Haunted Mansion. I really think it takes away from the Haunted Mansion the way they do it in Walt Disney World compared to Walt Disney, to Disneyland. And you know, when you go to the Haunted Mansion in Disneyland, you're walking through the yard and everything, and you're walking up to it's the anticipation is greater. It's similar to, and I think this is partly of how they decided to design Twilight Zone Tower of Terror. You know how you walk through the grounds when you get up to the porch in the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think should have happened with the Haunted Mansion, but it didn't happen.
So. Yeah. I mean, the idea behind that, obviously, in Disneyland was the fact that they had to put the box or whatever you want to call it, the actual ride building outside of the main site and had to go underneath the tracks and stuff like that.
Right.
So you sort of had to meander to get there. Whereas they didn't have to do that with Disney, but I mean, but in, you know, again, another one of the problems, if you want to keep going, is that Small World is just not comparable to Disneyland. The facade, the clock, I mean, it's just this like just another little ride on the side there. So you know, it's just so weird that they had so much more space and they didn't use it wisely.
Yeah, they claim to have, we have the blessing of size, as he said in that Epcot message. And I'm glad you mentioned Small World, because I think Fantasyland is too small. I think that Fantasyland, when you think of Small World, then you think of Peter Pan. And I mean, it's like you're going through a mall, a strip mall, and okay, we're going to go here, we're going to go there. The facade of, It's a Small World out in Disneyland. And I think we keep talking about Disneyland. It's just on a much grander scale. And the Christmas overlay is just really something to behold out in Disneyland. So I think Fantasyland, and they did expand it. But I think that originally it was just too small. I have a couple others, but I wanted to give you a chance to think about some things you think that were mistakes.
Well, obviously the one now I would think that he would have, you know, the one, obvious one is the Genie Plus system and the reservation system. I think the guiding tenet of his original plan was, I want a place where parents and kids can all go together, enjoy no matter their social economic status. And I think the Disney World parks have now all become much more expensive and elite, and you need a lot of money to be there. And you know, there's not a lot of choices for families. You know, they got to make a lot of money or save a lot of money. They're not going to go as often, and they're not going to, you know, be able to enjoy as a family as much as they want to. So that would be my thing. I think he'd be thoroughly disappointed with the new system.
I think that you hit the nail right on the head. I think that when he was sitting on the park bench and watching his daughters on the merry-go-round and thinking, you know, it should be something that the whole family should enjoy. So I think that's
but just
very
even
much
the money thing too is just, you know, it's weird. I know they started off with the ticketing system, right? So you would pay a fee in and you'd get the tickets. I don't remember. Yep. Did you have to pay a fee to get in or just buy the tickets?
No, there was a fee to get in, and then they had kiosks throughout the park in which you would buy a, I think it was like a $10 or $20 booklet, and you had the ABCDE tickets, and I think I have one of those booklets around here.
I remember doing it as a kid. I remember going in and trying, and in my little child mind, trying to figure out which rides I could go on, because you could mix and match like a C and a D together, you know, or a B and an A together would make a C or something, whatever it was. But yeah, you know, and so I get it. I mean, I get that part of it too. And that was a great way for them to sort of keep the lines down, which I think is another thing. I think he'd be totally unhappy seeing 1 hour, 2 hour wait lines for attractions. They want guests going out and spending money, not just standing there for an hour and a half. So I think that's a mistake that they made, that I don't know if Disney would have been happy. I forget about Walt. I would have thought Roy would be kind of annoyed that everybody's standing around not spending money.
Yeah, I always maintained that one of the reasons why FastPass was put in place is that they did not want, like you said, people standing in line in there. If they're standing in line idle, then their credit card is idle, their wallet is idle, and they could be buying what do they call those, churros, instead of waiting in line. But I think Walt would have welcomed FastPass because it would have given his guests an option and stuff. So,
definitely.
So I think so. I think one of the biggest mistakes they made was putting Stitch's Great Escape in. I remember being fortunate enough to ride that attraction with several people in the Disney podcast blog community, and we all pretty much were not happy with it. And we talked to one of the Imagineers about it that day, and we thought that it wasn't friendly enough. It just didn't do it. And that was Stitch's Great Escape, followed, I forget,
Extraterrestrial,
yeah, which was also kind of.
That was a weird placement for it too. They put it in Tomorrowland, and it was a scary ride. I mean, I know it was supposed to be futuristic, but it almost felt like Alien, the movie Alien. You know, you're just scared and it's coming. And I don't know where else you would put a ride like that in the Magic Kingdom.
There was no connection to a movie or anything.
Yeah, like it definitely would have been. You could have pulled it out and put it in anywhere. I mean, Hollywood Studios. You could put it in Epcot. You could have put it, you know. I mean, I wouldn't say Animal Kingdom unless you put it in Beastland, whatever that was called. But even that ride, I just remember being on that ride, and a mother had their young daughter with them, and the child was losing her ever loving mind on that ride. And I was like, you're in Magic Kingdom. You shouldn't be scaring these poor kids to death. So obviously they felt like they needed to change that up, and they put Stitch in there. And that was just as it was almost like scary, but also just not as fun as you'd want it to be. Like they couldn't decide what they wanted it to be, funny or scary.
You're absolutely right. We actually got to experience it at a a soft opening, and we heard children crying when we were in there. And then when we exited the attraction, there were cast members who were asking leading questions.
Mm-hmm.
Such as, so you would come out of that attraction, Chris, and someone would say, so tell me, what did you like about the ride? Did you, you know, tell us how you liked the ride. In other words, we assume that you loved the attraction. What did you like? You know, and I remember being asked that, and I said, wait a minute, you're thinking that I like it. Why don't you ask me what I thought of it? You know?
Right.
And then we talked, we had one Imagineer looked like he was a leader or a design. And we said, what are you trying to pull here? What do you mean? Well, we're trying to fix it up. You know, they knew that there were some adjustments that had to be made. I don't think so. I don't think they changed anything. You know, Stitch was like six arms or whatever. It was like a monster. Was it supposed to be funny? I don't know. Yeah. People didn't like the things coming down on their shoulders. So
yeah, that was the claustrophobic feeling that a lot of people had, even from the original one. That was a big thing, was the claustrophobic feeling of all of that.
So that was a big mistake. Of course, that attraction, that building, leads me to the next point that you were kind of just helping me transition into, and that is that they made a mistake in how they constructed that building, because of the way it's attached to the TTA, it now limits them to what they can build in that building. And if you remember way back when, it was Mission to Mars, that was in the original. And so they never really changed the infrastructure, if you will, of that particular building. And if they ever wanted to put something that was not limited to being in a circle and looking at something in the middle, they would have to do some serious reconstructing of the Tomorrowland Transit Authority. So I think that was a mistake. And again, you don't realize these mistakes, you know, give them a pass. You don't know what's coming down the future in 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. But
yeah.
I think you need to have some kind of vision of flexibility down the road.
Right. Interesting.
Anything else, Chris, that you could think of in the Magic Kingdom?
I'm trying to think about the Magic Kingdom. I do miss two things, and then it's weird. We're going to go back to Disneyland. I wish they would have brought the Matterhorn over. That was like my favorite ride as a kid when we'd go to Disneyland every year. The other was the idea of the monorail going through the park. I know it goes through Epcot. I just love that idea of going and seeing the park as you're coming in and going through it. And there's a an exit there. Like you can get out into the parks from the monorail. Obviously it was done in Disneyland for the Disneyland Hotel, but you know, it's weird. Some of the things that they carried over and some of the things they didn't carry over. They carried over the size, but they didn't carry over like some of the fun, good stuff. So, I mean, I'm sure there are other things in the Magic Kingdom that I'm thinking the same, you know, other things, but it's more the same. Like, oh, why'd they do this attraction? Oh, why'd they put this here? But so
that's a good point. I think it would have been neat to have the monorail. I know that when you go into Epcot, the monorail goes around Spaceship Earth, around Future World, and whatever it's called these days, World of Celebration.
Yeah, it's going to be all different now.
And then you get off and then you go into the parks. For the Magic Kingdom, I'm wondering if it would be better to be on the monorail before you go into the park or after you leave the park. I don't know, but that would have been interesting to see them put the monorail such that it encircles the entire park.
Yeah.
That would have been
even
good.
Coming down, like, you know, you could exit back like in Toontown area back in there, where they had the train stop there. But
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not a designer, but it would just be an interesting thing to see the park from above. I mean, I know for the most part it's just buildings and stuff like that, but it'd be
it's easier to Monday morning quarterback, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So, where do you want to move next?
Let's go to Epcot. And the first thing I want to mention is something that has been discussed in the past. And I just think that this there's no excuse for this mistake. And that is it never came through. But I'm talking about the Japan Pavilion and how they had begun construction on the Japan dock ride. And they were to take guests through the history of Japan. And it was halted because there were obviously parts of Japan's history that were not very friendly to the United States. And those were called the Japan. Within the attraction, I believe the terminology was the dark years. And there were groups that discussed this with Disney, and they found out that there was construction going on for the dock ride, and they halted it. But I think that would have been a big mistake. It was a mistake because they started building it, and this was in the Japan Pavilion. But I thought that was a mistake. I want to go back to what you had said when we were talking about the Magic Kingdom. You had mentioned how Walt wanted something that the whole family could ride and enjoy. Well, Mission Space is not that. Mission Space was a mistake. And Mission Space, again, doesn't. Yeah, I don't know where they got that idea. I mean, I think that the centrifuge, you know, does a lot. There are a lot of people who were, who became ill as they were exiting that particular ride. They had to change it to have a soft ride on one side. While the other side was the more extreme ride. There were designs to build that attraction in other Disney resorts around the world, and that was halted because they discovered that not everybody likes it. And I don't know how popular it is, but that was a mistake. I think it replaced... did it replace World of Imagination? World of Motion, I don't remember. But it was the test track. Yeah, but I think that was a big mistake.
Yeah, well, I would say even dovetailing off of that, I think the Disney brand has always been, like you said, rides, attractions that the whole family can go on. Now, things like Space Mountain, Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. Now we're talking Expedition Everest. You're talking the Guardians of the Galaxy ride. There are a lot of these, you know, and then Mission to Mars, that they are high intensity rides that not the whole family can go on. I think what they should have done in retrospect is keep these attractions family friendly so that you've got kids from 10 to whatever can go on these attractions. And if you wanted a thrill ride park go do that. Like, let's make something. Cause I know everybody wants to go on the thrill rides. Like, there's the teenage group through the early 20s, maybe into 30s, who really love that stuff. Why not make that fifth gate, you know, all the high intensity attractions, and let us enjoy, like, what Disney does best is make it for the family. And by adding these attractions, they're inadvertent wieners or weenies or whatever, you know, Walt would call them, because everybody's drawn to them first thing when it goes off. Everybody goes racing to those spots, and it's not for everybody.
Yeah, I remember the rope drops and Magic Kingdom. People ran to Tomorrowland for Space Mountain, or they ran to Big Thunder or Splash. Yeah.
But I mean, those aren't that even that fast. I mean, I think Space goes like 35 miles an hour at most, right? I know Test Track goes 60. It's like the fastest attraction there, but
yeah, I think you're right. Well, now Tron is probably the fastest one.
Same thing. I guess we can go back to the Magic Kingdom and mention that, right?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I think that, I think it was Hench and Sklar, Marty Sklar, who came up with the final design for Epcot, and they did a pretty good job, except that I think that they needed to, the problem was on the corners, for instance, where France and Great Britain are. You've got that international gateway area. Mm-hmm. And if you go to the other corner, just after China, to the right of China, there's not much land back there. I've been back there several times, and actually that's where they put the extra kiosks. They used to put the extra kiosks for food and wine right behind the attractions, but there's not much room back there, like from where China is to the right of China, where they have it's almost like an African kind of area.
Yeah.
They can't build another pavilion there. And they've been talking about it. At one point they were going to build something back there, like some kind of an Australia possibility.
Right.
But they can't. So I believe I'm going to make a prediction. Maybe it may not happen in my lifetime, may not happen in your lifetime, but I think that there's going to be an attraction that's going to blow over the water. But I think they made a mistake with that design in that corner. There's just not enough space. So
interesting. Yeah. Yeah. It is kind of a dead zone back there. There's really nothing to see or do. I mean, you can play in some drums, you can grab some popcorn and soda or something like that, but
play some drums. Yeah.
Yeah. That's about it. Right. I mean, that's just, there's nothing there, and it is it's like a wasted space. I don't know what they should do with it, but they definitely need to do something, because it's flyover country for in Epcot.
One of the best things they ever built was Spaceship Earth. I really like what they've done with it, and I think the shimmering lights gives it a different kind of a personality. I really enjoy seeing it. However, I think they made a mistake with it, because like what we were discussing in Fantasyland with Stitch's Great Escape, that building, they are limited to what they can do inside Spaceship Earth. And when they wanted to change it and put an attraction, and I forget the actual name of the attraction, I think it was called Time Travelers or something like that, they discovered that the integrity of the building, and it is a building, was very much relied upon the track that is in there and which we ride on these days. So they are going to be limited with that. Now, I don't know if I really want to say it's a 100% mistake, but because you always think that when you build something, it's going to be forever. But I think that the flexibility there is going to limit them. And I think that the change that they made in Spaceship Earth about 10, 12 years ago, kind of disappointed. It's disappointing on the way down, and you have that video screen and, you know, your future,
that's
whatever.
That's dated now. You know, that's just that technology is, you know, it never works anymore. Like you never really see your face properly done. It needs an overhaul again.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know what that overhaul would mean, because technology is changing so quickly that whatever they put going down, you know, it's like the last scene in Carousel of Progress. It's already obsolete.
Obsolete, yeah.
So I think that's a problem. I think that there's a more recent problem that I'll get to, but one of the things I wanted to mention was I think it's a mistake sometimes for those who make decisions to say, I think that the guests would like this more than that. And in terms of Epcot, I think it's the decision to put revenue above magic, I'm calling it. Mm-hmm. And what I mean is that we see these festivals all year long. There's food being sold all year long. Mm-hmm. And it took away from the ability to have a parade around World Showcase. And Epcot does not have a parade.
Right.
I did see Tapestry of Nations. I don't know if you ever saw that parade.
Maybe years ago.
Quite a parade. It was very surreal and everything. And it's the song that you used to hear after Illuminations. But I really think that not having a parade in the in Epcot, especially with that promenade, it's just huge. You know, really could have done well. I think that was a mistake. And let me go back to a little bit to the Magic Kingdom. I think it's a mistake not having a nighttime parade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too. Anymore. Well, at least for now. But, you know, I wanted to mention that. Before I get to the last thing that I wanted to talk about Epcot, Chris, I was going to ask you, can you think of anything?
Well, I was going to disagree with you that I do like the kiosks and stuff, just because the original idea of the Epcot Park was it was a World's Fair all year long. And so having, you know, these things pop up and little things, I think adds a little something to it. And I think that it's great that they keep it around. I understand the need or want and desire of a parade, but I really do like the kiosks. I mean, or keep the kiosks up in you know, the World Showcase, and then do the parade in whatever this is going to be now, Future World or whatever they change it into. But you know, I like that. The other thing is, I think it was a mistake to just shut down and leave empty. What's the pavilion that it was the attraction?
The Millennium.
With the life.
Wonders of Life. Yeah.
I think it's like it was another space to go. And I would love to see them reopen it with something. I remember years ago I was asked to do a little design work for Imagineering, and they were thinking of doing sort of a robot land. Like they were gonna change it all up in there, and they were gonna have all the, you know, Wally and this and Star Wars characters. I don't think they went for it. It was just basically was done as a pitch for the higher ups, so it never went anywhere. But it's still just sitting there collecting dust. Sometimes they haul it out for some, like the cooking stuff for Food and Wine and stuff like that. But
right, it's like central area, yeah.
Yeah, but I'd like to see them do something with that. It was a mistake just shutting it down.
I agree. I've been there since they shut it down. There's some interesting places in there. I don't know if you were in there.
Yeah, we've been in there. We actually had an event upstairs.
The carousel room. Yeah. For those who are curious, so there is a room on the second floor. It's a conference room. But when you walk in the conference room, you're sitting at a table, and you're surrounded by the walls that are painted and decorated as if you're in the middle of a carousel. So you're surrounded by horses and everything. And it's a really neat room.
You guys did an event there, I believe, up there.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, we marched us up in there. I remember the event. I remember you guys up there. So
Yeah, that was fun. Okay, so I think what we're going to do is we're going to take the Hollywood Studios and Animal Kingdom and anything else discussion with this. And we'll do this on our next show, because I would like to get to the tips and talk about some things that I think would be helpful for everyone who, especially those who have never been. So these tips are kind of a little bit general, and I'm just thinking about things that over the years I've noticed and that have worked for me and have worked for others, and how things nowadays have maybe caused us to tweak those a little bit. Mm-hmm. First thing I want to talk about is planning the day. And I think with the crowds the way they are these days and Genie Plus and all this stuff, I think it's important to really set realistic expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they should be low. And by that, I mean, think about what your priority attractions will be for whatever day it is or wherever you're going. Right. And maybe limit yourself to say, I want to do these three or four attractions today. And the reason why I say three or four is because I don't think that, you know, you want to spend 7, 8, or 9 hours in a park trying to do all these attractions. So I think setting a goal of four attractions and trying to do them in the morning, I think is a realistic plan. Let's call these the must-see attractions. And then, you know, once you get those done and then the crowds start building around noon or one or two, maybe that's when you do other things like playing games, doing shopping, doing character meet and greets. I think that's an important thing.
Heck, go back to the hotel and take a break for an hour or two.
Yeah, hit the pool or whatever. Also, you know, finding a place to eat is a challenge. Mm-hmm. I think mobile ordering helps a little bit, but you have to find a place to sit and eat. But again, this comes down to the planning. You got to plan way in advance.
Right.
And now you have to know, okay, where can I make my park reservation? Okay, I'm going to be in Epcot today, so maybe we're going to try to eat in Epcot. So you need to link that more so these days than ever before.
Right.
And when you talk about eating, I think the best time to eat is in the afternoon, late lunch. You're more apt to find a table at 2 o'clock for lunch than at 12 o'clock for lunch. So
yeah, you should alter your eating hours.
Yeah.
For the parks. Definitely. I mean,
yeah.
We tend to have a breakfast, a quick snack in the hotel early before we go out, you know, and then you beat the crowds in there. Cause a lot of people go and grab something, especially like on Main Street, you go right into the Starbucks and there's a line that's 8 miles long cause everybody wants their coffee. But, and then we sort of do the same thing. We'll do lunch later in the day, or we'll get a snack and then do dinner early and then have another snack at night, you know, just to sort of avoid those long waits at restaurants.
Exactly. Just to piggyback on what I just said, what you've been saying, doing the attractions in the afternoon or evening may depend upon how you use that Genie Plus and Lightning Lane option program. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, attractions are going to be lightest in the early morning or at night during a fireworks presentation.
Right.
Okay. Or if you're at a party like Jollywood Nights or Mickey's Very Merry, maybe during that parade, you then do some attractions.
Hmm.
Couple other things, going and talking about going and leaving the parks. I've always said this from day one. If a park is going to open at 9 o'clock, you should be at the front of the park at 8:30. Always try to be there 30 minutes beforehand because they may not open right at 9. They may open at 8:45. You want to get a jump on anybody else. And if you're a hotel guest or DVC annual pass holder, and somehow one of those three statuses allows you to get into the park before general public, by all means, take advantage of that. The early bird gets the worm, and the worm being the attraction. That's for sure.
Yummy.
Regarding, I don't know if I'd mentioned this, Michelle and I do a lot of the dessert parties, and not to stuff our face with desserts, but to get access to a real comfortable area to watch a fireworks show.
Mm-hmm.
If those out there who are thinking about doing that, if you have an option of doing a pre-fireworks or a post-fireworks party, do the post-fireworks party. Why? Well, you still get to see the fireworks in a very comfortable area, but you also get to relax while people are exiting the park and the park is clearing out. You get to have some refreshments.
Right.
And then you leave. You don't have to fight the monorail. You don't have to fight the buses or the cars, the parking lot or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. So that would be a very important thing. And if you're not doing a dessert party, wait about an hour before you leave the park.
Yeah.
If you are in the studios, I would go to Galaxy's Edge and walk around there at night. I'll go over to Star Tours and see if you can hear the Ewoks around their fire.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important. If you're in Epcot, take a walk around World Showcase, make one rotation.
Yeah.
And then leave, because the Skyway is crazy. The parking lot is crazy and you've got time. So I would do that.
Yeah, definitely with the World Showcase going out the back to the bucket ride, whatever you call it. The line back there is crazy. You used to be able to just stroll out the back because nobody was going back there. Not anymore.
No. Going back to the studios, take note of when the Fantasmic shows are. And they usually last about maybe 20 minutes. So think about after. So if Fantasmic starts at, let's say, 9 o'clock, it's going to end at 9:30. That means that from 9:30 to 10:30, it's going to be crazy getting out of the park. So that's, you want to keep track of that, or you leave before the Fantasmic theater empties out.
Yeah. Never get on those friendship boats.
Yeah. The only other thing I could say that as far as tips before we close off is as far as the Animal Kingdom, that's a morning. To me, it's always been a morning park. Mm-hmm. You want to be there in the morning. You want to do whatever you can in the morning. The animals are going to be out there in the morning when it's cool. And at night, you know, I mean, you want to do Everest in the morning, or you want to do some of the Avatar attractions. I can't think of any others, but that's a park where that's a half a day park. It's always been a half a day park to me.
Yeah. So it's so hot midday. You got to get out of there.
Yeah. So those are the tips I was thinking of for this week, Chris.
All right. Well, we're going to finish up next week with Hollywood Studios and Animal Kingdom and our What They Should Have Done series. So thanks for the heads up. Now I know what to look forward to. On behalf of the Dean of Disney, Mike Scopa, I'm Chris Eliopoulos. We'll see you in the parks and on the road.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.
Rap group.